Professor Howard Morris, welcome to Amicus Copia.
Thank you. It's a great pleasure to be here with you.
This interview is going to be about standardization and harmonization in laboratory medicine. And our first question is, does it matter if the results from different laboratories are not comparable?
Well, the simple answer is yes. And that's because more and more of clinical practice is being driven by international guidelines. And they depend very often on laboratory testing. So, for example, if a medical practitioner is thinking of prescribing a statin to a patient, they will do so on the basis of the measurement of LDL cholesterol. And therefore, what we need is for all laboratories to be getting the same value for LDL cholesterol for a particular patient. If your laboratory is inaccurate with LDL cholesterol, let's say it's low, then many of your patients will not qualify for treatment for these statin drugs when actually they should be getting them. And so therefore your patients will be disadvantaged. And similarly, if the value is high, then if from your laboratory, then your patients who don't need statins would be prescribed them. And therefore, again, that's not good. So what we need is for each laboratory to providing comparable results so that the medical practitioners can treat their patients to the optimal levels.
How is assay standardization achieved?
Well, this has been described internationally through the ISO organization, and in fact, ISO number 17511 outlines exactly how standardization can be achieved. So, for example, if we're dealing with analyzing a molecule that is small and very well characterized at the molecular level, let's, for example, say glucose or creatinine, we know the atomic structure of that quite accurately. So substances, preparations of very high purity can be made, equivalent to analytical reagent grade. And then in a laboratory, we can carefully weigh out a known amount. We can dissolve it in a known amount of water, shall we say, and we can prepare a primary standard. And then that primary standard can be used to calibrate a secondary reference procedure method. It might be isotope dilution mass spectrometry. And then with that method calibrated by the primary standard, we can assay serum samples to a high degree of accuracy. And in that way, we can ensure that the assays of glucose, in this example, on serum, are now traceable back to a pure substance, a pure level and an SI unit. So then the manufacturers or making these reagent kits, they can purchase these secondary reference materials from metrology institutes, whether it be NIST in the United States or IRMM in Europe or a Japanese metrology laboratory, and they can then provide the standardization of the assays that we are going to use in our clinical laboratory.
Is assay standardization limited to simple, low molecular weight analytes?
No, it's not. And this has been a great technological development by some of the people involved in standardization of clinical assays. What it requires is defining the biologically important section of the molecule, part of the molecule. So, for instance, with hemoglobin A1c, it's a very large molecular weight protein, and it gets glycosylated because of high blood glucose levels. Now, from a chemical point of view, it was identified that one particular amino group on that very large molecular weight globin chain gets glycosylated before any other. And therefore, it was able to be defining the area or the substance to be measured. And in this case, this is called the measurand. And so the measurand of hemoglobin A1c was able to be defined in terms of just a small molecular weight, a small part of that total, very large globin protein chain. And then that standardization could take place.
And is it possible to standardize all clinical assays?
No, not at this time. And that's partly because we have an inadequate definition of what we're trying to measure in many examples. So, for example, in the clinical laboratory, if a woman thinks that she might be pregnant, we measure a protein called human chorionic gonadotrophin, HCG. Now, at the moment, we measure a whole mixture of proteins called HCG. It consists of a mixture. What we don't know at this time is what is the exact part of the HCG molecule which defines pregnancy. And if we could do that, if we knew that, then we could standardize that assay. But we can't, we don't know that yet. So until that, we then have to satisfy ourselves with harmonization of HCG assays. And so that's part and parcel of the strategy that is needed at this time.
And is harmonization adequate for achieving comparable results between clinical laboratories?
Yes, it is, given certain limitations. And that's the questions that we have to deal with. It's suitable in certain defined situations.
And why don't we just concentrate on harmonization and leave standardization as too hard?
Well, that would then limit us to these particular circumstances. So when the process of harmonization is dependent on the current analytical technologies that we're using in routine clinical laboratories. So we can harmonize an assay, let's say for beta-HCG, with using the current technologies that are available. And there's a number of them currently in routine use in laboratories, but when a new technology gets developed and laboratories then start to apply that technology to the measurement of HCG, then we will have to do reharmonization of that assay to ensure that the new assay is harmonized with the older assays. Whereas when we do standardization, then that is a job that is done once, and then it will be applicable to all the technologies that are developed for measuring the analyte into the future. So standardization is a job that does once, harmonization is a compromise and will have to be updated routinely as new technologies come into use in our laboratories.
And what are international organizations doing with regard to standardization and harmonization of clinical assays?
Well, international organizations are critical for both these strategies, standardization and harmonization. When it comes to standardization, this is largely supervised by an organization called the Joint Committee on Traceability in Laboratory Medicine. And it has working groups responsible for the assessment of reference materials, for reference measurement procedures, and reference laboratories. And then most importantly, the JCTLM maintains a database on these materials, procedures, and laboratories, which is accessible to everyone. Therefore, if you are wanting to think about the standardization of a particular assay, you can check or you wanted to sell an assay, or you wanted to prepare an assay for your laboratory for a particular analyte, you can then check the database from JCTLM. And you can identify whether there are reference standards for that and what's the reference measurement procedure and so forth. So it's transparent and you can see what's available. And currently, the largest and the most prominent manufacturers of reagents and kits for routine clinical laboratories access the materials that are on the JCTLM database, and they're assays for creatinine and for glucose and sodium, etc., are traceable back to reference standards that have been assessed and approved by the JCTLM. Then we have harmonisation, and there is a website for harmonisation, and if anyone wants to look up that website on a search engine, I would suggest they use the term harmonisation AACC, that is American Association of Clinical Chemistry, because it doesn't come up very easily if you just search for harmonisation. And this website, again, sets out the programs which are being undertaken, sets out the projects of particular analytes which are being assessed and improved for harmonisation. And what's, again, important with the harmonisation program is that when analytes and assays have for a particular analyte have been harmonised, then that information will be placed on the JCTLM database. So if people are searching for either standardised assays or harmonised assays, then they will be able to access just one database and they will find what they need in there. And JCTLM database is easily defined. Just put into your search engine JCTLM and that will then come up with take you to their database. And it's quite accessible database. You can see what it is. There's a list there. It says the database for reference materials. And you can click on that, and then you can search for creatinine. And it will provide a list of all of the standard reference materials for creatinine which have been prepared and which are available for purchase from various institutions and organisations.
And is harmonisation for clinical laboratories limited to harmonisations for assays, or are there other projects required to improve clinical practice of our laboratories?
Certainly, harmonisation is covers more than just the harmonisation of clinical assays, because there are many procedures in our which are conducted by clinical laboratories, which have great importance and impact on the patients being analysed in our laboratories, which can and do, unfortunately, vary from laboratory to laboratory. And because of this variation, it can cause confusion for the patient, confusion for the medical practitioner, and of course that can end up being challenging the patient's safety, because they might get the wrong medication because of a misinterpretation of a laboratory result. So we have areas of the laboratory such as the pre-analytical phase which need harmonisation. So how do we prepare a patient, for instance, if we're going to administer an oral glucose tolerance test? We should have a harmonised process for that, so that each laboratory is using the same preparation, the same pre-analytical conditions for that test, because the pre-analytical conditions actually influence the outcome of the test. So until we all use that same procedure, then we will get variable outcomes of such a test. As well, we need the harmonised units. Now, in some countries in the world, the different laboratories actually report the same analyte in different units. They could be in nanograms per mil, or they could be in nanomoles per litre. And there's a very big difference between, depending on the units that are being used. You can imagine the confusion that a medical practitioner would get having to open up the practice notes of a patient's results and see results for 25 hydroxyvitamin D, for instance, in nanograms per mil, and then look up the next patient's results and see the results of that patient in nanomoles per litre. There's a big difference. And medical practitioners are human. They make mistakes. We should not be making it more difficult for them. We shouldn't be creating hurdles in the means of providing patient care and assisting our clinical practitioners. And so there's also the issue of reference intervals. So we have different, we are likely, some currently, so different laboratories for a particular analyte to have one set of range for reference intervals, whereas another laboratory has another range. And of course, again, the medical practitioner is very busy. He's searching, he sees a potassium result of 3.5. He says that's normal or that's adequate in a particular laboratory. When he sees it again in another patient, he's going to think, oh, 3.5, that's normal. Whereas if the reference interval is different, then that patient's results are likely to end up to be interpreted incorrectly. So as they are the sorts of processes that we need to harmonise between in our laboratories. Now, at the moment, that sort of harmonisation is largely taking place on a national scale within one country. And that's appropriate because we're talking to each other. At this stage in the delivery of patient care, most of that occurs either at the city level or at the country level. It doesn't really occur too much at the international level. However, our Chinese colleagues have really taken a step forward. So over the recent period, the last 3 or 4 years, they wanted to establish reference intervals for their 1.6 billion people. That's a lot of people. And they started doing this study, and they were determining the reference intervals for all the popular analytes that we measure in chemistry. And they found in different parts of China that when they analysed them on the same instruments and so forth, they found that there actually was no difference between the reference intervals from eastern China and western China, southern China. And they had very large numbers, hundreds and hundreds of thousands of normal, healthy people that they were establishing these reference intervals. And so they've come to the conclusion that throughout 1.6 billion people of China, they have common reference intervals. Well, I think that's a remarkable achievement, and it's something that those of us, particularly from smaller countries like Australia, we should be following their lead. If they can do it for 1.6 billion, we can surely do it for 20 or 50 million people. And so they're the tasks that we have in front of us for harmonisation in laboratory medicine. These are important tasks to provide to ensure improved patient safety and to ensure improved quality of services, particularly to medical practitioners.
And can this activity only be conducted by international organizations? Are there responsibilities for national activities or even within your own laboratory?
Well, I definitely believe that we all who are working, all of us who are working in routine clinical laboratories, have a responsibility to ensure to work towards the highest standard of our performance. And that includes being cognizant, understanding the standardization and harmonization procedures and how we can improve the practice of our laboratory. Now, certainly, just one small point, for instance, would be to ensure that when you're introducing an assay, you might be buying a new assay for glucose, or you might be introducing a new assay for troponin or something like that, but to then use as one of your selection criterion for introducing that assay is that it has traceability to an internationally recognized standard reference material. And I would suggest that you could even include the definition of a reference material recorded on the JCTLM database. And that way you would be saying you have an assay which is traceable to the highest level of reference material and therefore providing a comparable assay service as to anyone else in the world. Now, we have lots of the assays today say they are traceable on their reagent, on their kit inserts. But the question is they're not necessarily traceable to an internationally recognised standard reference material. They're traceable to a preparation made by the company or something like that. Well, that's irrelevant, really. It has to be traceable to an international standard reference material in order that that assay and the results from your laboratory will be comparable to the results from other laboratories using standardized or traceable assays. The other issue is for not when you have analytes which are conducted or measured using assays which are non-standardized or non-harmonized, then you should identify from the external quality assurance values the relative values of assays compared to other assays, and then be able to interpret where your assay would be providing results in line with international clinical guidelines. So if the international clinical guidelines were set up on a Siemens assay, shall we say, then you should know where your assay lies with the Siemens assay. Is it lower than the Siemens? Is it higher than the Siemens? Then when your medical practitioners are measuring that analyte and applying these international clinical guidelines, you could give advice and say, well, your guideline, your equivalent value would be this. It would be a fraction, or it would be more than what the clinical guideline. And then the third point I would recommend and urge all those listening to this radio program is to be aware of the developments and achievements of the standardization and harmonization programs, and then to adopt them into your clinical laboratory as they become available, so that you're able to say, this is what we're doing, this is the best practice internationally, and this is where we're this is how we can provide that world standard laboratory service from our laboratory, no matter where you are in the world.
Thank you very much for your interview and for your time, Professor Howard Morris. It's been a pleasure to have you in your Microscopia.
Thank you very much. It's been a great pleasure to talk with you.